Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
In honor of this installment of Chiefs and Bills, which is always a classic, did you know that since 2018, so the first year Patrick Mahomes really became a starter, his second season, and Josh Allen's rookie season, the two quarterbacks ranked number one and number two in the NFL in total touchdowns, with 280 for Mahomes and 279 for Allen. This is the Numbers Game. I'm Cynthia Freeland, and let's break down the full 13-game NFL Sunday slate of games for Week 9. Happy halfway point. Next week, I head to Berlin, so we'll have all of our normal shows, don't worry, but we'll do our extra reset and reaction show the following week, meaning ahead of week 11's games. In that show, we'll do a little trade impact analysis, as well as have a fresh look at the playoff picture. The trade deadline is November 4th, that's next Tuesday, so we'll have a full week, including games, to be able to really assess how the new players factor into their new teams, or how their departure impacts their old teams. Which reminds me to tell you to look out for some other new things on this channel or in your feed from Numbers Game. That's the tease, but basically some additional fun things are coming. Which also reminds me to very kindly ask you to subscribe here on YouTube or on your preferred pod platform so you don't miss anything. And remember to leave comments, review the show, pass it along to a friend. I really appreciate your help in growing everything we're trying to do here at Numbers Game. Even though we did have a TNF show this week, let's do some accounting of my week 8 results, a week with 13 total games, where I went 10-3 straight up, 9-4 against the spread, and 9-4 on totals, which brings my season to 61.2% straight up, 51.7 ATS and 62.8% on totals. Now, I have an idea, so it's going to seem a little roundabout, but we'll get there. Okay, I have two rescue dogs. You may have heard me talk about them sometime before. Their names are Gordy and Clyde, if you haven't heard this before. One is a Husky German Shepherd, and one is a Husky. So Gordy Howe, Gordy is the Husky German Shepherd, and Clyde is the pure Husky. They are big dogs, each weigh about 65 pounds. Wait till you see their Halloween costumes. Oh, they're so cute. Anyways, I digress. Since the format of the show starts with the three biggest dogs of the week, what if we use the dog theme in a cool way to give back to dogs in every Sunday slate show in November? Here's my idea. You leave your three dog game picks in the comments, along with the name of an animal shelter or rescue that you really like. For every correct pick that you make, I will put your handle and rescue on a piece of paper and then throw them in this helmet. It's a lion's helmet, but I'll put the paper in there, throw them in here, mix it around, and pick one each week, and then I'll donate $100 to whoever's rescue wins in that week. So I'll explain it again next week when we start, but I was kind of thinking it'd be a cool idea, and I hope you are with me on it. The biggest dog game of week 9 forecast to be right here in Los Angeles. The Saints are coming to town, and the Rams are favored by 14 points. The total in this one is 44.5. My model says the Rams win 28-13. The Saints have made the move to rookie quarterback Tyler Shuck, who's the highest drafted New Orleans quarterback since Archie Manning, who went number 2 overall in 1971. Shuck went 40th overall, so in the second round. The Saints offense in general, one of their strategies has been to go no huddle, the second highest rate in the league, 24% of the time. That is how often they have gone no huddle. Tyler Shuck, he came in relief last week. Things weren't going great, but he completed 6 of 12 such attempts for 49 yards with an interception running the no huddle offense last week. Now, here's what I'm going to say. Do they change the strategy going forward? My answer is most likely yes, because they're quite different quarterbacks. But the Rams defense, no matter what, I don't care if you're a well-seasoned quarterback. This is a tough defense to face no matter who you are, as they've allowed the fewest yards per attempt at 5.9 and the fourth lowest completion percentage, just 66%. And by the way, that is when they didn't generate pressure this season. So that's tough already. Now, let's make it tougher. Well, the Saints have allowed a 38% pressure rate on their quarterback, ninth highest in the league, and the Rams defense. They have a 38% pressure rate, the fifth highest, along with 26 sacks. That's the second most. As for Los Angeles's offense against New Orleans, well, they likely get Puka Nacua back. So let's talk about Matthew Stafford passing the ball deep. So 20 plus air yarders. He has done this on 12% of his passes. That's the fifth highest rate in the league. And then you're looking at downfield passes. So anything over 10 air yards, he's averaging 12.2 yards per downfield pass. That's sixth highest among all quarterbacks. And he's getting the eighth most EPA per downfield pass on them at 0.61. New Orleans, they've allowed the eighth highest completion percentage over expected on such passes, along with the 11th most EPA per downfield pass at 0.48. Bottom line, I have the Rams by 15, 28-13. Fun fact here, the Saints have not had a rookie starting quarterback win a game since week 10, 1981. That was when Dave Wilson defeated the Rams 21-13. That is the longest rookie starting quarterback win drought in the NFL. The one to watch here, let's go back to Stafford. Let's go with at least two touchdown passes and no interceptions. Let's go with both of those things. So at least two passing touchdowns and no interceptions. By the way, Stafford is tied for the league lead with 17 passing touchdowns, despite only playing seven games. And he is the third player, and this is the fifth instance in the NFL, like all of NFL history, for a guy to have 17 or more passing touchdowns and two or fewer interceptions in their team's first seven games of a season. Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, they both have done it twice. Dog number two, well, it's Carolina, so a cat that's a dog, whatever. The Panthers at the Packers, where Green Bay is favored by 12.5 points. The total is 44.5. I love dad jokes. My model says Green Bay wins 32-17, so 13 points. The Panthers offense against the Packers defense is a strength on strength situation when it comes to the run game. Because of Panthers running backs, they're averaging 122.4 rushing yards per game this season. That ranks third most in the NFL. Coach Canales talked about how well Rico Dowdle has been playing this season. He's kind of saying, hey, like, we can't look past this. And yeah, of course you can't, because he's averaging 5.7 yards per carry. That's third most in the league. And it's the most by a running back in a season in Carolina history. Obviously, that would have to hold for the rest of the regular season. But of course he's doing excellent things. 5.7, any coach would take that. The Packers defense ranks second best in the NFL, allowing just 4.6 yards per play. And part of this is because they have the third best run defense, allowing just 78.9 rushing yards per game. Switching over to Green Bay's offense against Carolina's defense, well, Jordan Love, he turns 27 on Sunday. So let's talk about his quick passing. He's averaging 0.43 EPA per quick pass this season. That's second most in the league. And by the way, 76.4% of their passing yards have come after the catch on quick passes, the sixth highest rate in the league. Carolina's defense last week allowed 98 yards after the catch off of quick passes alone. That's third most in the NFL. That was against the Bills. And overall, they've allowed a 0.18 EPA per quick pass this season, which is the ninth most in the league. Bottom line, I have a 30-17 win for the Packers here. That means 13 points. And right now, the Packers, they've won four games decided by two or more possessions. Only Indianapolis and Kansas City have more such games. This would move Green Bay to 5. Fun fact, Jordan Love turns 27 years old on Sunday. I mentioned that before. But did you know that each of the former Packer quarterbacks, so Bart Starr, Brett Favre, and Aaron Rodgers, won an NFL championship or a Super Bowl at age 27? The one to watch here is Josh Jacobs to have at least 63 rushing yards. 84% of his yards this season have come after contact. That's fifth highest in the league. Dog number three, it's Tennessee. They're hosting the Chargers, who are favored by 10 points. The total in this one, 43.5. My model says the Chargers win it 26-13, so by 13 points. Starting with the Chargers offense, well, obviously, we have to talk about Justin Herbert because he leads the NFL with 2,140 passing yards this season. Overall, the offense is averaging the fourth most total yards per game at 378.5. They're also best on third down at 49%. But TNF last week showed us just how important Joe Alt is to this offense. In fact, the team is 4-1 with Alt on the field this season, 1-2 when he's not there, and five of Herbert's seven interceptions have come with Alt off the field. That is not great. Justin Herbert, he's been pressured on 44% of his dropbacks. That's the second highest rate in the league. However, when he's not pressured, the man has a 63% dropback success rate. That is the best in the NFL. He also has the sixth most EPA per dropback without pressure at 0.38. Why am I bringing up this no pressure situation? Of course, it's because Joe Alt's back, but also because Tennessee has the eighth lowest pressure rate at just 30%, and they've allowed the third most EPA per dropback when they haven't gotten pressure on opposing quarterbacks at 0.46. Switching over to Tennessee's offense against Los Angeles' defense. Now, I really like Cam Ward. I want him to succeed. Some of the moments from him have looked incredible. I feel like we should take his pulse. He seems to be very cool and collected. Now, this will be a chance for him to increase, improve some of his stats in an area that hasn't been so great. So split safety coverages have been an area where Cam Ward has a 71.3 passer rating, and that's the third lowest in the league. And he's only completing 59% of his attempts with a 5.8 yard per attempt average. Now the Chargers defense, they use split safety coverages just over 50% of the time. That's the fifth highest rate in the league. When doing so, they allow a 65% completion percentage and the third fewest yards per attempt at 5.6. So perhaps this is something where now we can identify some of the split safety coverages and use that, like that pulse that's like icy veins, to try to kind of beat the coverages and figure out that next step in quarterbacking. Bottom line, I have the Chargers by 13, 26 to 13. The one to watch here, well, it's Justin Herbert to rush for at least 14 yards. Now, Herbert leads all quarterbacks with a 10.9 yard per carry average on scrambles. That's the most in a season by a quarterback in the Next Gen Stats era. And Tennessee's defense, they've allowed 311 rushing yards on scrambles to opposing quarterbacks. That's 12th most in the league. So it's a nice matchup here. Plus, I think the number is low despite a lopsided victory for the Chargers. I still think Justin Herbert will run for more than 14 yards. Okay, so if this were next week, here's how this would work. I believe the Rams, Packers, and Chargers would win. So I would write in the comments that the Rams, Packers, Chargers, and then I would add Detroit Dog Rescue in the comments. Clyde came from the DDR and I got him when I was at the draft in Detroit. It was very special. Anyways, bam, I'd have up to three chances to get my name and rescue selected. So just add the comments of who you think's going to win for the biggest lopsided games, the biggest underdog games of the week. I think it's a great idea. Why not? Moving on to confidence picks. There was a great comment from Carrie Minner asking about which is a better Survivor pick between the Rams or Chargers. I also love that you play Survivor with your grandson and are in the final 2% of your nationwide pool. Bravo, that's very good. Now, I think both Los Angeles teams are great picks, but if you were thinking about saving one team for later, I would say to save the Rams because the Chargers have a harder remaining schedule than the Rams, so maybe you wouldn't want to have to sweat it out as much later. Totally up to you, but that would be my strategy between which LA team to play. Next up, it is Minnesota at Detroit. The Lions are favored by 8.5 points. The total in this one, 47.5. My model says Detroit wins 28-20. So my Vikings note, what should I talk about on offense? Oh yeah, just J.J. McCarthy's return. The University of Michigan quarterback makes his return in Michigan. He's had a week to practice now. He must be all better. But we're going to go with that it's him because I don't think it's Max Brosmer. McCarthy either threw an interception, he had three of those, or was sacked, he had four of those, on 1/3 of his 21 dropbacks when facing man coverage in weeks 1 and 2 against the Bears and Falcons. He has not played over the past 6 weeks, but those three interceptions against man are still tied for the second most in the league. The Lions defense, they're obsessed with man. They play at 42% of the time, the fourth highest rate in the league. And they've pressured opposing passers at the third highest rate when playing man, so 45%. Why does this happen? Well, partly because the opposing passers, they hold the ball for 2.84 seconds on average in that situation. That's the third longest in the league. But the situation for McCarthy's improved because the Lions are banged up in the secondary. However, Brian Branch is back and maybe even Terrion Arnold too. So let's balance that out with a little golf talk for Detroit's offensive notes. He has a 148.6 passer rating on intermediate throws. That's second best in the league. But Minnesota's defense, they are great against them. They have a 65.4 opponent passer rating allowed on such throws. That's fifth lowest. The one note for Goff we always have to talk about here, he leads the NFL with a 137.7 passer rating against the blitz. And Minnesota, they love to blitz. B-Flow will blitz. 44.3, that is the percentage, the second highest rate in the league. Bottom line, I have the Lions by 8, 28-20. This is driven by Detroit being multiple on offense. They have an inside rush rate of over 46%. That's higher than the league average. And they're averaging 1.6 rushing yard over expected on inside runs this season, which is the most in the league. They're 1.9 yards before a contact per inside rush, also paces the entire NFL. The Minnesota defense, well, they have allowed the 10th most EPA per inside rush this season and the 4th most yards before contact to such runs at 1.3. This sets up my one to watch really well, and that's Jahmyr Gibbs to score a touchdown. Very chalky. I don't care. He has 160-plus scrimmage yards and multiple touchdowns in both games against the Vikings last season. He also has 9 career scrimmage touchdowns against the Vikings over 4 matchups. Let's head to Gillette Stadium for a matchup between the Falcons and the Pats. New England is favored by 5.5 points. The total is 45. A My Model says a touchdown win for the home team, 25-18 Patriots. Now, the Falcons are the most confusing team in all of football. I am curious who they actually are. I feel like their stats are a big scribble. Are they the team that beat the Bills in Buffalo? Or are they the team that can't score against the Panthers or get blown up by the Dolphins? I don't really know, so let's just put some notes here and we can try to figure it out together. Bijan Robinson, well, he leads the NFL with 137.4 scrimmage yards per game this season, but he had 70 and 2.8 yards per carry over the last 2 weeks, compared to 164 and 5.8 yards per carry in weeks 1-6. The Patriots, they have not allowed a 50-yard rusher through the first 8 weeks. They're the first team with such a streak in the first 8 games of a season in the Super Bowl era. Now, Atlanta's intermediate passing, they've done this on 29% of their pass attempts. That's the second highest rate in the league, so 10 to 19 air yards. But they have a negative 0.17 EPA per intermediate pass. That's the third fewest in the league. And the Patriots, they have allowed the fifth fewest EPA to intermediate passes this season at 0.13 per intermediate pass. New England's offensive note has to be on Drake May, who leads the NFL in both completion percentage at 75.2 and passer rating at 118.7. He is on track to break the single season NFL completion percentage. By the way, that's Drew Brees' number at 74.4. He did that in 2018. And May has 5 games this season with 200 or more passing yards and a 135 or more passer rating. No other player has ever had more than 3 such games in their team's first 8 games in a season. He also has more passing touchdowns with 5 than incompletions, where he has 4. On deep passes, that is a wild number. Think about that one. And Atlanta's defense, they've allowed a 23% completion percentage, which is 4th lowest, and have 4 interceptions, which is the most on deep passes. So that could be one area that they lock it down a little bit. However, another thing to note is that Atlanta's defense has also allowed just 149.1 passing yards per game, which is the fewest in the league. Bottom line, New England by a touchdown, 25-18. Atlanta, they're going to blitz 48% of the time. That's the highest rate in the league. How does Drake May fare against the blitz? Just 0.36 EPA per dropback. That's 3rd most in the league. The one to watch here, Kayshon Booty. Also the most fun name to say ever, Kayshon Booty, Kayshon Booty. Anyways, him to have at least 38 receiving yards. I like his chances deep in general. In fact, he's had a receiving touchdown of at least 25 yards in each of the last 3 games, and he has 7 receiving touchdowns on deep targets since 2024. That's tied for the most in the league. Just like throw where Falcons corner AJ Terrell doesn't happen to be. I usually try to save the Sunday night tilt for the end, but when you have Bills and Chiefs, you got to move things around. So the Sunday nighter, it's Seattle at Washington. The Seahawks are 3-point road favorites. The total is 46 in this one. My model says Seattle wins it by 4, 26-22. Starting with the Seahawks offense, I'm just going to keep talking about Sam Darnold until it feels like he gets a lot more national love. What does a guy got to do? I mean, he leads the NFL with 9.1 passing yards per attempt this season. He's one of 3 quarterbacks with 40 or more passing touchdowns and 5 or fewer losses since 2024. Who are the other two? Oh, just Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff. He has a 137.2 passer rating on downfield passes, which ranks 1st in the NFL. Okay, but let's focus on the matchup for this week. And let's use that deep passing number to kind of dig in. So Sam Darnold is attempting a deep pass over 10% of the time. He's about a full percentage point over the NFL average, which is 9.4%. He's averaging 25.7 yards per deep pass attempt this season, the most in the league. And he's 2nd only to Drake May in completion percentage over expected and EPA per pass on deep pass attempts. By the way, his EPA per D pass is 1.53 expected points added. That's bananas. Washington has allowed the sixth most yards per deep pass this season at 17.1 and the 10th most EPA per deep pass at 0.67. As for Washington's offense, which we already know will be without Terry McLaurin, keep an eye on their injury report. I'm assuming Jaden Daniels will be back since he's been practicing. So let's go with that. He leads the league in passing yards per attempt when scrambling this season at an average of 12 per, while also completing a league-high 70% of such passes. Now, he scrambled 22% of the time on his dropbacks. That's the highest rate in the NFL. And the matchup here, well, the Seahawks defense is very good in general. They've allowed just 4.7 yards per play, which is third fewest in the league. But an area where they have struggled to defend pass attempts is when a quarterback is scrambling. They've allowed passers to complete 50% of such passes, which is tied for the fourth highest, while allowing 7.1 yards per attempt, which is seventh most. They have also surrendered two touchdown passes on these scramble throws, which is tied for the second most in the league. Bottom line here, I have a 4-point road win for the Seahawks, 26-22. Because of how they earn that third lowest yard per play average on defense, namely mostly stopping the run. So quickly in the passing, I just like this passing note. They're one of two teams with four players to have more than 20 pressures, which is pretty bananas. But let's focus in on the run game. They've allowed 75.7 rushing yards per game and 3.3 yards per carry this season. Both of those are the fewest numbers in the NFL. This defense does not allow explosive runs either. They've allowed an NFL low 8 carries of 10 plus yards, and 3 of those were actually scrambled. They've done all of this while also having the fourth highest light box percentage. They use a light box, so they don't stack the box with defenders. They use a light box 51% of the time. The one to watch here, it's Jaxon Smith-Njigba to score a touchdown. JSN leads the NFL with 8 receptions and 339 yards on deep targets. He also has the most yards when defenses have blitzed his quarterback with 318. Of the 15 catches he has in that situation, 10 of them have been explosive plays. So 10 of them have netted at least 15 yards. Washington, they've given up the fifth highest explosive pass rate and the second most yards per attempt when they've blitzed. Both teams in our next game are coming off of their byes, and that's happening in Las Vegas when Jacksonville comes to town. The Jaguars are 3-point road favorites. The total in this one is 45. My model says Jags win 24-20. Now, the Jaguars offense is all about if they can get their passing game going after their bye. Let's look at Trevor Lawrence's numbers against zone defense. He's completed only 125 of 209 passes for 1,253 yards with 3 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. That is a 60% completion percentage against zone, the lowest in the NFL. His passer rating is 73.7. That's fifth lowest. The Raiders, they've used zone on 84% of opponent dropbacks. That's the third highest rate in the league. Now, Trevor Lawrence has also been sacked 14 times over the last 2 games, so 7 in each of week 6 and week 7. So the O-line is a source of concern. For Las Vegas, it sounds simple, but scoring needs to be a priority. They've averaged just 8.7 points per game since week 5. So let's look at the run game for maybe a clue here. Vegas has run to the inside, so in between the tackles, at the ninth highest rate ahead of their bye, 50% of the time. But they're averaging the ninth fewest yards before contact per carry to running backs on inside rushes, just 0.7. Now, Jacksonville, they're pretty good at slowing down those inside rushes. They've allowed just 0.8 yards before contact per inside rush. That's 13th fewest. Bottom line, I have a 4-point win for the Jags, 24-20. How do the Raiders get back to 20? Brock Bowers is back. Geno Smith has struggled when targeting the intermediate level of the field this season. He has a negative 0.61 EPA per intermediate pass. Now, the Jags, they're pretty tough at stopping intermediate passes, allowing a negative 0.07 EPA per intermediate pass. That's second fewest in the league. However, Devin Lloyd is no longer there. They are missing some strategic and key parts in the middle of the Jags defense. So I am sure that Chip Kelly has some strategic 12, 13, dial up a lot of different configurations. Look at what the Rams did in London. And I think Brock Bowers has a big day, which makes my one to watch, Brock Bowers, to catch at least 5 passes. Since I really want to do a full good for 6 on Buffalo at Kansas City, let's do a Through the Uprights. Just came up with that right now. Working title, aka 3 stats you need to track, like kicking a field goal. You get it. All right, here we go. Number one, Justin Jefferson to score a touchdown. I have him with over 75 receiving yards as well. Jefferson has averaged 120.8 career receiving yards per game in 10 games played against the Lions. That's the most by any player against any opponent since at least 1950. Number two, Chargers tight end Aronde Gadsden, my favorite name to say right now, to have at least 49 receiving yards against the Titans. Aronde Gadsden leads all tight ends with an 11.7 yard per target average. That would also be a rookie record. On downfield targets, so all of those passes intended to travel more than 10 air yards, Aronde Gadsden has a league-leading 245 yards and 107 receiving yards over expected. That's the most among all tight ends, and he got it on just 10 receptions. Number three, Seahawks running back Kenneth Walker to rush for at least 53 yards against the Commanders on Sunday Night Football. Walker has forced a missed tackle on 28% of his carries. That's the eighth highest rate. And he's produced an explosive run on 15%. That's the ninth highest. The Commanders' defense has missed a tackle on 27% of opponent rushes, the fifth highest rate in the league. Next up, it's Indianapolis at Pittsburgh. The Colts are 3-point road favorites. The total is 50.5. My model says Indianapolis wins, but just by 2 points, 27-25. So the Colts offense is averaging 33.8 points per game. That's number one. They're 7-1. That's number one. But the fun fact is they're actually the first team in the Super Bowl era to allow fewer than 10 sacks and have fewer than 5 turnovers in their first 8 games of a season. They've allowed 9 sacks and only have 4 turnovers. But let's look at a specific matchup that matters in this one. On short passes, which is something that they have used on 48% of their attempts, that's the 11th highest rate in the league, Daniel Jones has averaged 0.36 EPA per short pass. That is the most in the NFL. Pittsburgh's defense has allowed 6.9 yards per short pass attempt this season. That's fifth most in the league, along with 4.7 yards after the catch per reception to short passes, also the ninth most in the league. As for Pittsburgh's offense, well, Aaron Rodgers has a 68.3 completion percentage, is averaging 7.2 passing yards per attempt. He has 16 touchdowns with just 5 interceptions, a 104.4 passer rating. Those are all his best numbers since 2021, which is a pretty good season for him considering he won MVP with Green Bay. Now, the Steelers also have 9 different players with a receiving touchdown this season. That's the most in the league. Indianapolis's defense ranks number 2 in pressure rate at 39%. But number 21 in pressure rate on quick passes, it drops down to just 14%. Bottom line, Indianapolis wins 27-25. Why? Because Pittsburgh's defense is allowing 386 total yards per game, that ranks 30th, and 25 points per game, ranking 22nd. They're allowing 273.3 passing yards per game, which is the worst in the NFL and the most in Pittsburgh history. And also specifically to this matchup, their defense uses man on 43% of opponent dropbacks. That's the third highest rate in the league. And Daniel Jones has averaged 8.3 passing yards per attempt against man coverage, the fifth highest in the NFL. The one to watch here, Alec Pierce to earn at least 42 receiving yards. Pierce leads the NFL with a 21.4 yards per reception average, and he's had 45 plus receiving yards in each of his last 5 games, which is actually the longest streak of his young career. Next up, it's Chicago at Cincinnati. The Bears are 2.5-point road favorites. The total in this one, 52.5. My model says the Bears win 25-24. My note on the Bears offense against the Bengals defense is the run game. Why? Because the Bears have been really good at it. They're averaging 154.3 rushing yards per game since their week 5 bye. That's third best in the NFL. And specifically in this matchup, well, the Bengals, since week 6, they're allowing 184.7 such yards. That's last in the NFL. But let's go a little bit deeper, because Bears running backs have been contacted behind the line of scrimmage on just 39% of their carries. That's the third lowest mark in the league. And their 1.5 yards before contact per carry ranks as 7th highest. The Bengals have only contacted running backs in the opponent's backfield at the lowest rate in the league, just 35%. And they've allowed an average of 1.5 yards before contact per carry, which is 6th highest. Now, there are some bad matchups here for Caleb Williams, who's averaged 3.16 seconds in terms of time to throw this season. That's the longest in the league. It's actually the third longest since we started tracking this metric in 2016. PFF says his accuracy is 55.8, which is third worst in the league. Now, Cincinnati, they only blitz 17% of the time. That's the lowest rate in the league. What happens when Caleb Williams is not blitzed? Well, he has a 61.8 completion percentage, ranking 29th, just 907 passing yards, that's 26th, two passing touchdowns, that ranks 32nd, and four interceptions. So a 71.9 passer rating overall, ranking 31st. Now, switching over to Cincinnati's offense, Joe Flacco has a 47.3 passer rating under pressure since week six, compared to a 116.9 passer rating when he is not under pressure. Chicago generates pressure at just a 29% rate, ranking 27th in the NFL. But there are some trouble areas for Joe Flacco and the Bengals as well, as in when they don't use play action and on short passes. So Joe Flacco only uses play action on 17% of his passes. That's the seventh lowest rate. I know it's just since week six, but that's as long as he's been there. But Chicago has allowed the second fewest EPA per dropback when teams have not used play action at -0.27. Joe Flacco also has a 49% short passing rate. And again, that's since week six, but it's just like a little bit above the NFL average over that span, which is 47%. However, the Bears have allowed the third fewest EPA per short pass this season at -0.06. Bottom line, Chicago wins, but only by 1 point, 25-24. It's Cincinnati's defense that tips the scale. They've allowed 31.6 points per game and almost 408 total yards per game of offense to opponents. Both of those rank last in the NFL. They've also allowed 27 or more points in seven straight games. They are also last in the NFL with 94 missed tackles and 645 yards given up to opponents from missing tackles. The one to watch here, let's go with two, a touchdown for both Romo Odunze and Ja'Marr Chase. By the way, Chase has 38 receptions, 346 yards, and two receiving touchdowns on 54 targets in the three games since Flacco became the starter. 38 receptions in a three-game span is tied for the most in NFL history with Michael Thomas in 2018. Niners at Giants is next. San Francisco is a 2.5-point road favorite in New York. The total in this one, 48.5 points. My model says Niners win it 24-21. For my Niners offensive point, I'm actually just going to keep saying this until it is not true about running to the outside against the G-men. San Francisco is rushing to the outside on 57% of their running back rushes this season. That's the seventh highest rate in the league. The Giants, they've allowed 4.3 rushing yards over expected per outside running back rush this season. That is the most in the NFL by 2.1. The gap between number one and number two, so the Giants and number two, is the same as between number two and number 18. So you get what I'm saying here. They've also allowed 0.25 EPA per outside rush to running backs. Guess what? Most in the NFL. Switching over to New York's offense, let's recap Jackson Dart's first five games. He's had an over 93 passer rating in four of his first five starts. He has a 124.1 passer rating on intermediate passes. That's seventh best in the league for 332 passes, three touchdowns with no interceptions. He has five passing touchdowns and no interceptions on quick passes. He also has a 73.5 completion percentage along with a 111.7 passer rating on those quick throws. And San Francisco's defense is appreciably different without Fred Warner on the field in both passing and run situations, as in they're averaging 0.3 yards per carry more. So they're giving up 0.3 more yards per carry with him off the field, along with 1.2 yards per attempt more and about a 10-point passer rating increase when Fred Warner isn't there. Bottom line, I have San Francisco by a field goal, 24-21. The one to watch here, let's keep it simple. But Christian McCaffrey, who didn't get a lot of volume last week, he's going to score a touchdown. It's going to happen, you know, anytime. Keeping San Francisco's quarterback out of pressure's way will be a big priority. I have McCaffrey with 123 scrimmage yards in my median projections and at least one trip to the end zone. If you love defense, this next one is for you. And you know I love defense. This is Denver at Houston. The Texans are favored by 1.5 points. The total is 39.5. And I have Denver winning 21-19. I love a good game of chess, especially on defense. And obviously, the Texans lead the NFL in points per game allowed at just 14.7, along with total yards per game allowed at 266.9. The Broncos lead the NFL in yards per play allowed at just 4.6 and sacks with 36. And by the way, the pressure rate that they're getting on other teams is 46%. That's the most in the NFL by about 6 percentage points. Starting with the Broncos offense against the Texans defense, Bo Nix is averaging 4.9 yards per attempt when he's been pressured this season. That's the fourth lowest in the NFL. Stop me if you've heard this one before for me. It's week 9. I don't think the Broncos have had their bye. Yeah, I've probably said it at least 15 times. The screen pass. The Broncos throw screen passes. Yeah, that makes sense. Pressure, 4.9. Okay, you get it. The Broncos O-line, though, has allowed just a 24% pressure rate. That's second lowest in the league. And they've allowed just 8 sacks on their quarterback, which is the fewest in the NFL. Now, Bo Nix deep passing, that has been a thing. He's just completed 30% of them this season. That's the sixth lowest rate. And Houston, here's a number to remember, 17.3. That's the passer rating that they've allowed on deep passes this season. You get a 39.6 for, you know, throwing an incompletion into the dirt. That's the lowest in the NFL on deep passes. As for Houston's offense against Denver's defense, well, CJ Stroud ranks below average in yards per pass at 5.9, EPA per dropback, -0.42, and dropback success rate, 33%, when he's been pressured this season. Now, let's add a new next-gen stat to our mix. So our repertoire will now include win probability added. So when he's been pressured, CJ Stroud ranks 24th among quarterbacks in this metric. He actually has a -75%. So his win probability added when pressured is -75%. Just so you know, there are only 4 quarterbacks who have a positive such percentage this season: Daniel Jones, Dak Prescott, Baker Mayfield, and Drake May. Now, moving over to Denver's defense, their 46% pressure rate, again, most in the NFL by 6 percentage points. They also accompany that with the lowest dropback success rate when they've pressured teams. So they're allowing just 26% of all opponent dropbacks to end up being successful against them. That is the lowest rate in the league. Bottom line, I have Denver by 2. I think picking Houston is going to be trendy. Do I like that Denver is missing Pat Surtain? Abso-freaking-lutely not. However, I'm talking about Denver's pressure rate for the third time because it is so important. Also, the gap between them and the number 2 team, that's 6 percentage points. Stop if you've heard that one before. That's the same as the gap between the number 2 and the number 19 team. Guess who that number 19 team is? Houston. So the better O-line drives my score, and that better O-line belongs to Denver. It's weekly wildcard time, our list of 5 forecast touchdown scorers that could be considered underrated, but not to us. They aren't guys you drafted in the top rounds of your fantasy draft. They aren't among the top few touchdown scorers on the season. These are guys who have elevated end zone reaching odds this week. Maybe you could call them sleepers, or maybe a that helps no one in fantasy, but not to us. We're seeing these guys' touchdown odds before they happen. Number 1, Lions wide receiver Jameson Williams against the Vikings. Williams has been targeted on a career low 15% of his routes this season, but coming out of their bye, getting him more involved makes a lot of sense, especially against a team who has been vulnerable to deep passes and speed. Number 2, Chargers running back Kamani Vidal against the Titans. He gets into the end zone in 58% of my simulations, despite the Chargers passing on 66% of their plays so far this season. That's the third highest rate in the NFL. Number 3, Giants running back Tyrone Tracy against the Niners. No Fred Warner means increased opportunities. Number 4, Broncos wide receiver Cortland Sutton against the Texans. I get it, Troy Franklin has been the call in recent weeks, but Sutton's size and tight window production are the kind of traits a Sean Payton, who's a Bill Parcells tree coach, looks to in these tougher coverage matchups. Number 5, Bears running back DeAndre Swift against the Bengals. I get it. He's been nursing a groin injury. He didn't practice on Wednesday. So double check on Sunday, 90 minutes before. But this has been his pattern in recent weeks, and he's played. And if he's playing, he's ending up in the end zone. And last but not least, the one we've all been waiting for, the Chiefs are the only team with a top 5 total offense and total defense. But Mahomes is somehow 1-4 against Sean McDermott in the regular season. It is Kansas City at Buffalo. The Chiefs are favored by 2 points on the road. The total in this one, 52.5. My model says Buffalo wins 26-23. 5. Starting with the Chiefs offense against the Bills defense. Well, Patrick Mahomes leads the NFL with 21 total touchdowns and 286.1 passing yards per game since week 4. He has faced the lowest pressure percentage in the league. Thank you, O-line, but also scheme. Why do I say that? Because he has his fastest time to throw at 2.61 seconds. He's also had 11 touchdowns with only 2 interceptions when he's not been blitzed as well. Let's look at Xavier Worthy's impact because it's kind of dramatic. So Patrick Mahomes averages 8.2 yards per attempt when Worthy is on the field this season compared to 6.8 when he's not there. This one's a little funny, but whatever, we're going to say it anyways. Mahomes has a higher passer rating than his career high of 113.8 when Worthy's on the field, and he has a lower passer rating than his career low, which is 92.6, when he's off the field, aka things are good when Worthy is there. But let's now add in Rashee Rice and more space for Travis Kelce. The horizontal fun, the vertical fun, it's kind of unlimited for Andy Reid. And Buffalo's defense, they have some things to address, as in they only rank 13th in pressure at 36%. And the non-Bills-like missing tackles thing, they've missed 110 tackles. That's a 26% rate. That is the third most generous. So the third highest rate of missing tackles. That is not something that you usually get from Bills defenses. So that seems like a pretty big mismatch. Switching over to Buffalo's offense against Kansas City's defense. All right, Josh Allen under center. Let's look at what happens when running backs rush when Josh Allen is under center. So he has been under center for 84% of running back rushes this season. That's the second highest rate in the NFL. Buffalo has the third highest EPA per rush by a running back when the quarterback has been under center. When Josh Allen's been under center, they also have the fourth highest rushing yards over expected per rush at 1.3 and the most yards before contact per rush at 1.8. So they do it a lot, but they're also really good at it. And Kansas City has allowed the ninth most EPA per rush by running backs with quarterbacks under center this season. Josh Allen has the third most EPA per dropback with play action as well. Those two things make sense that they kind of go together. He also has a 62% dropback success rate using play action. That is the best, highest in the NFL. And Kansas City has allowed the highest explosive play rate at 32% and dropback success rate at 65%. Against play action this season. Bottom line, I have a 1-point Buffalo win, 26-25. And yes, I double checked that everything without Ed Oliver still remained a Buffalo win, 26-25. Now, Josh Allen has averaged 5.6 big plays per game in 9 matchups against Steve Spagnuolo. That is the most among 26 quarterbacks who've started at least 4 times against him. Kind of interesting. Right? And the Bills will need to control the ball to win because deep passing has not been a source of success for the Bills. As in, Josh Allen has the lowest passer rating on deep passes. It's 29.4. I told you, if you throw incompletions, you throw it into the ball, you get a passer rating of 39.6. He has 3 interceptions on deep passes. That's tied for the most in the league. And Kansas City, well, they've allowed an opponent passer rating of 20.6, second lowest to just the Texans in terms of opponent passer rating on deep passes. Definitely advantage Kansas City defense over Bills offense when it comes to deep passing. Now, let's kind of go through what my gut is saying. First, Ed Oliver being gone, in addition to the other pieces that are missing for the Bills defense, and they're giving up tackles and yards, and Mahomes is absolutely dealing, and the Chiefs are making exceptional second half adjustments. That's what my gut says. What does my math say? Well, it's the Bills O-line and run game. James Cook has been afforded 269 yards before contact. That leads the league, even though he's played one fewer game. The Bills are the only team to run more than pass at a 50.5% rate, and they're netting 5.2 yards per rush. Their ability to pace the game and the fact that this team is literally built to beat the Chiefs matter. One way to see that is that Mahomes has an 85.9 passer rating against Sean McDermott in the regular season. That's fifth lowest among 29 opponent head coaches who Mahomes has played multiple times in his career. And when I say the Bills are built to beat the Chiefs, I'm not being cute or using hyperbole. I actually know that this team drafts and brings in free agents with the thoughtfulness towards how to top the Chiefs' specifically. So again, no hyperbole there. They just really want to top the Chiefs. Makes a lot of sense. Let's finish this off with Good for Six, Chiefs at Bills edition, of course. These are six stats to track after you jump through a table in Orchard Park in order of least to most risky. I dialed up the heat this week, so there's not a ton of chalk in here, but again, they're in order of least to most risky. Number one, James Cook to score a touchdown. I told you the run game metric. This puts that into action. Number two, Rishi Rice to score a touchdown. Mahomes has so many options, it's nuts. But Rice reaches pay dirt in 55% of my simulations. Number three, Travis Kelce to haul in at least five passes. Kelce leads the Chiefs with 37 receptions and 474 receiving yards. He's averaged 77 yards per game over his past two games. Number four, Josh Allen to score a rushing touchdown. The Bills, being the best run blocking OL, especially for their scheme, extends to their quarterback as well. Number five, Kareem Hunt to score a touchdown. I know I'm calling for a lot of touchdowns here, but Hunt has been the red area short yardage specialist over recent weeks, and I think that continues here. And number six, the Bills to either be winning or only behind by 1 point at the half. The Chiefs are masterful at second half adjustments. This game forecast to be one where the Bills have to hang on in the second half as opposed to make the comeback, meaning I think that the Bills get off to a stronger start and then the Chiefs have a stronger second half, but I have a 1.1 for the Bills, so you know how it all nets out for me. And that is it. That is the show for the Sunday slate for week 9. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I really appreciate it. Please leave some comments, ask some questions. I'll be back here with the Monday Nighter very soon. Remember, you can go to numbersgame.me and download the spreadsheet that I put up every Wednesday that has a bunch of player projections, as well as everything we go over in this show in numerical format. You guys, I appreciate you a ton. I'm really, really, like, I can't believe it's halfway through the season already. It has flown by. Thank you so much for hanging out. I'll see you back here shortly. And most of all, enjoy the football.